President Trump is far from the first president who's met with Vladimir Putin with high expectations. He's actually the fourth.
He's very smart. Smart and remarkably, we had a really good, blunt relationship. Brutally blunt.
I looked the man in the eye. I found it to be very straightforward and trustworthy. We had a very good dialogue. I was able to get a sense of his soul.
The goal here is not to go after Mr. Putin personally.
What President Obama and Vice President Biden and I have been saying, we want to reset our relationship.
And let's do it together.
So we will do it together, okay?
But those reset expectations haven't always gone according to plan, as Hillary Clinton and even President Bush know very well.
I looked in his eyes and saw his soul. Russia was broke. I mean, short-term broke. And price of oil goes up and Putin changed. And look, he's a very smart tactician. The problem is his whole attitude and on most issues is I'm going to win and the U.S. is going to lose.
Just like the others, President Trump has heard the warnings, but believes that this time things will be different.
I said I'm going to a few hotspots. We have NATO, then we have the U.K., and then we have Putin. And I said, Putin may be the easiest of them all. You never know.
Kimberly Martin, professor of political science at Barnard College at Columbia, expert on all things Russia, has seen the different presidents interact with Russian leaders, only to walk away empty-handed. But she's also been watching this from the other side. And unlike over here, she says the Kremlin is very clear about what they want when Putin sits down with President Trump on Monday in Helsinki.
I think it's a lot about style. And what's interesting is that the Russian media seems to be thinking the same thing. So I've just been watching some of their talk shows where they talk about current events. And it's all about trying to figure out what in the world Trump wants. And they think it's very interesting that Mike Pompeo isn't participating in person in the summit. And they're trying to figure out what to make of that. They do a very good job, actually, of covering the various kinds of political conflicts in the United States and what people think about Trump and about the accusations of Russian election interference and how that is, in their sense, a problem for Trump to have to come over. And it seems to be on the focus of just how weak the United States is in some ways going into this, that there is this disconnect with NATO allies, that Trump has, you know, a certain level of popularity at home, but that he also is facing these difficulties at home. And then they also covered the visit of U.S. Congress people to Moscow and the differential in what was, in their words, said in Moscow and what the Congress people reported when they got home.
There are multiple historical precedents for a U.S. president sitting down with a Russian leader. Tell us what is different about this one-on-one than previous presidents who have had the one-on-one, I want to establish a good relationship with Russia.
I think the major difference is Putin as an individual, because he didn't come out of the upper level Communist Party hierarchy the way that Soviet presidents did. He is not somebody who's known as a great reformer the way that Boris Yeltsin was. Instead, his background and most of his career was spent in the KGB and then leading the follow-on organization for the KGB, the FSB in Russia. So he is basically an intelligence officer through and through. And I don't think that he is going to be somebody who is swayed by anything that President Trump says. Instead, he's going to be somebody who is trying very hard to shape the dialogue in a way that makes sense for his own interests.
Well, that leads us to the question then of what does Putin want from this meeting?
Putin has already gotten the most important thing that he wanted, which is just to be taken seriously at a time of high tension with the United States, at a time when a lot of the domestic conversation in the United States is focused on the Russian attempt to meddle in the 2016 elections. The fact that Trump wants to go to talk with Putin and the fact that it is essentially in Putin's backyard, it's in Helsinki, just across the Russian border. And what Putin has always wanted is a sense sense of being taken seriously, of having done a great job of making Russia be important again, that nobody can do anything in the world without taking Russian interests into account. And so this is just something that demonstrates that.
So we should not expect then to see something like President Trump walking out and saying, it's okay, we figured out Ukraine, they're getting at Crimea, we got that all figured out, and Syria, we're done.
Well, you know, President Trump is rather unpredictable, and so it is possible that that will happen. But we saw something similar happen with the summit with North Korea just a couple of weeks ago, where the U.S. side came out saying, oh, yes, we have, you know, this agreement to denuclearize. And what happens? We see the North Korean side actually building up new weapons to test. And so if that were to happen, it doesn't necessarily mean that anything is going to change in the policy. But I wouldn't be surprised if President Trump walks out of the meeting saying that they've solved world problems and they now have peace forever.
And they have an agreement, but we may never see an actual agreement.
No. And I think you're bringing up a really important point, too, which is that this is probably exactly what's going to come out of the meeting between Trump and Putin that happens at a private level, which is that the people on each side will spin afterwards what the actual conversation was about. And so, you know, a lot of people have been afraid that maybe President Trump would give away too much to Putin. But I think we have to keep in mind that whatever he says in that meeting is not actually being recorded by American note takers. And so his advisors, when he gets out of the meeting, can work with him and make sure that the message that gets across is the one that they want to actually have get across. And I think it's also important to keep in mind what just happened at the NATO meeting, which is that President Trump said all kinds of, you know, really critical, aggressive things. And yet, what did he end up signing? The common statement that says that they will work together, that they have unity, and that they are concerned about the Russian threat. And so what gets signed, what gets on paper, is not always what gets tweeted and what gets talked about to the press.
President Trump has said that he sees Russia not as a foe, but as a competitor. How should the U.S. see Russia? And how do you see Russia? Are they a foe or are they a competitor?
They're both, and they're also somebody that we need to cooperate with on a whole host of issues that relate to very technical questions of international security. And the one good thing that could come out of this summit is if the advisors on both sides who come out with the official statement from the U.S.-Russian summit were to concentrate on two basic things. One is arms control, and the other is restoring military-to-military programs. And these sound kind of technical and boring, but it's a way that we could move forward to have a better understanding of what Russia would do in a military crisis, which might very well happen. And it's a way of each side remembering that they have a responsibility to be stewards over an immense nuclear weapons stockpile that the two countries have. And it would be a shame if this summit ends without any progress on arms control or other really technical military matters that matter a great deal, even if they don't necessarily make good television.
NATO, of course, was built to protect Europe at the time from then Soviet aggression. Is Russia still a threat to this liberal world order? Is NATO itself still important and relevant at this time, vis-a-vis now not the Soviet Union, of course, but Russia?
That's a really good question. And there's no question that Putin would like to see the liberal world order fall apart in many ways. He is, you know, explicitly anti-liberal in a lot of what he says. He criticizes liberals for having brought the world to a place of chaos where there is no sense of moral values and so forth. In terms of NATO having relevance, I think it still does. And what's really interesting is that even as President Trump is backsliding on some of the more liberal democratic norms that everybody thought that the United States shared up until very recently, the Europeans are stepping forward to really be the standard bearers of that.
What should we make about the fact that a sitting president of the United States is sitting down with one-on-one, as you said, without any note takers,
right,
a country that every institution that has studied it within this country says they have meddled, Russians actually did meddle in our elections.
Yes.
And the president still seems dismissive of these reports and sort of shrugs off Putin's take on this?
I think there's two separate issues there. The first issue is, should we be isolating Russia as punishment? And I think the answer there is no. We do need to be talking to Russia and trying to find ways to at least tamp down the level of conflict, even if we don't get any grand bargains out of this summit, which I think would be a bad idea. The second issue is that President Trump, for whatever reason, cannot admit that the election meddling happened. And you know, I kind of doubt that President Trump is going to push President Putin very strongly on that particular issue. I don't think that Putin would care if Trump did, because what we know is that President Obama said to Putin, "We know that you've been meddling in our election. Please stop," in September 2016. And it was in October 2016 that the Podesta emails were released by Russia. So whatever Trump or anybody else says to Putin or any other Russians about election meddling is going to go in one ear and out the other. So, you know, you can sort of look at it in multiple ways. I don't think that means we should not be talking to Putin, though.
Nor should we expect that at some point, if the president, President Trump, or Americans continue to browbeat Putin, that eventually he's going to throw up his hands and go, "Okay, you're right, fine."
No, they aren't. And the one danger would be that Trump came out with an agreement that said, "We are not going to, quote unquote, interfere in each other's elections," without defining it. I think it would make sense if they came out with an agreement that said, "We're not going to dox each other's emails," or something that was specific to that extent. But Russia interprets everything that the U.S. does to try to encourage human rights and democratic reforms in Russia as meddling in Russian elections. And so if they were to come out with an agreement at that general level, I think that that would be negative for the ability of anybody in the United States to have any impact on Russian human rights in the future. And it might cause a lot of discouragement among people in Russia who want to change the system and want to move in a more democratic direction.
Kim Martin, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Amy. It was a pleasure.